The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is cloud, mobility, social networking, and international security. Our guests for today's show are Patrick Heim, who is the Chief Information Security Officer for Kaiser Permanente. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Sanjak.
How are you, sir?
I'm absolutely fabulous.
Beautiful. Very good to hear that. We have Richard Duro, who is the Chief Information Security Officer with Textron. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
So how's life at your end?
I'm well, thank you.
Beautiful. Now we have Will Pilgrim, who is the President and CEO for Center of Internet Security and Founder and Chair of Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center. Good morning, Will.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very good, sir. How's life at your end?
It's wonderful, but rainy.
Okay. So life is beautiful for all of us. At the same time, we have some challenges that we deal with daily. And why we have assembled here today is essentially we have perhaps embraced too much at the same time, and I'm sure that you almost must be looking like a Hercules to the rest of the world because you have to handle so many windows that have been created in that strong fort which you had, you know, put a very solid door on. The reason I say this is because we all along had been dealing with security, and now we have got these three different new disruptive technologies that have been introduced, which is mobility, cloud computing, and social media. The game might have changed, but just to confirm, Patrick, let's start with you. How do you think the game has changed in your world?
Somewhat significantly for a number of different reasons. One of them is just the velocity around some of these technologies. From the perspective of a security individual, we like to study, understand, protect, respond, etc. But what we're finding is that the rate of adoption of cloud mobility, etc., there's almost what I would call an irrational exuberance around it, immense amount of velocity and pressure to make it happen, to push it into the business space. And on top of that, just the consumerization element of technology coming into the business. That's one side of it. And it's really a parallel, that dynamic is a parallel to the external threat dynamic, which is also developing very rapidly, where we see a growing sophistication in the threat against systems, both now, you know, really trending away from what we used to see in the past, which were lone wolf individuals looking for fame, let's deface a website, perhaps steal some data, and it's really trending more towards organized cybercrime that is designing their attacks to be slow and evasive and not easily detected. And frankly, just, you know, recently seeing evidence of more state-sponsored intelligence services getting involved also. So it's really a double dynamic of the threat getting significantly more sophisticated, and at the same time, the challenge that we have because of the kind of the rate of change and the velocity with regards to the technology itself, putting us a little bit on our heels.
Now, with that being said, well, you go ahead, and I think you also talk to a lot of different state constituents, and you are helping them bring a common set of standards, if I understand correctly. And with that being said, what kind of a common pain that you see across the board with these things?
Great question. And, you know, when you think about the fiscal climate that we all live in today, especially at the state and local government level, we need to find ways to improve our productivity, our efficiencies, but at a reduced cost. So a lot of these mobile technologies have great advantages, to doing so. But they come with challenges that we all know. I agree with what Patrick was saying, that from our perspective, what's changed is the speed at which these new technologies are getting implemented. And my concern is not that we shouldn't implement them. I believe that these technologies, this is the sort of the backbone of our industry, should move forward, but we need to do it smartly. And we need to do it to make sure that security is baked in at the beginning and not at the end. But if you start looking at how fast not only are the technologies being developed, but then deployed, the fear is that the technologies are more about the functionality and less and time to market, and maybe not as much as ensuring that the security, and I don't mean just security baked in at the technology level, but at the management level. So, for example, social networking sites are great ways of sharing information, bringing communities together that would be very difficult to do otherwise. But processes and policies need to be put in place to ensure that we implement them correctly.
Now, let's look at what Richard has to say in his world. What kind of responsibilities have changed, or how have they increased in quantity? Richard. Okay, we might have lost Richard. So we'll.
I'm sorry, I'm here.
Okay, you there?
For us, cloud computing really, in my opinion, is nothing really new. We've been dealing with what I call external to our environment for a long time, and I think that cloud is really just a coined phrase for dealing with data external to your environment. But I agree with what I've heard about mobility and social media. There's been a paradigm shift in speed and velocity in which these devices are being developed and executed within your environment. With that, I think a significant change in that paradigm shift has to occur at the user level, where they have to have more awareness and understanding and responsibility for how they handle those devices and the data associated with them. With speed also comes risk. A lot of the vulnerabilities and risks associated with those devices, in my opinion, haven't even been developed and understood yet. History has just shown us that whenever we implement new technologies, it takes us a while to vet out the true risks and vulnerabilities associated with the devices in order to harden them. But if you jump on the speed bandwagon, you're going to also have to just accept that there's going to be a certain amount of risk that you're going to incur.
Now, we always talk about the word fear and also associate that with the very security discipline. How much of this is the fear of the unknown versus fear of the obvious when we respect to these three technologies? And also, the question is that the incremental threat that is being caused by these disruptive technologies that we have started adopting, are they enough for someone to open their purse strings? Well, what do you think?
Well, first, I'm not sure if fear is the right word, because if there's healthy fear, then it influences behavior. And I'm not sure if we're there yet. So I believe that there's an unknown. I believe that there's the obvious. What concerns me is that how do we translate that to behavior change? And all of that means that there are threats that occur, there are certain things within our control, both at the end user level, but also at the organizational level. But when you look at statistics that show that there are still those that don't have the basic security precautions implemented within their system, we haven't done yet a good job in changing that behavior. So is the incremental investment worth it based on the threat? And the threat is easily answered yes. When you look at statistics, again, and you can find statistics on everything. We could spend the whole hour on just stats. But a recent study did a review of 22 million computers and found that 50% of them were infected.
data breaches just continually are rampant. It's almost like it's a rite of passage to have your data breached at some point in time, and the financial consequences are huge, and those are hard to quantify, all the costs associated with it, but to the extent that we can, we already know that those financial costs are large. Does that translate out automatically into more monies being allocated to the security side of the house? Not necessarily. And it's our job to make it clear. For those that are in the executive position or those that control the purse strings, you have to make it real. You can't go in there and talk techie speak. They'll glaze over. This has to be where people can put their arms around and understand the consequence of what really is a computer breach. We used to talk about computer breaches, and people really listened, but they didn't understand it. When we actually showed how a computer can be hacked into and that somebody can actually control their device remotely, the light bulbs went on, and they suddenly, the understanding of dollars to mitigate that would flow. And I just want to end with saying that it's always, in my opinion, more costly to respond and to recover from an event than to protect and detect that event. So it's well spent to have those dollars spent at the beginning.
Now, the way you explain, of course, if I was a business person, I might open up my mind and start looking at things differently. But there are different animals out there who would interpret the same thing with saying, oh, this person has this job of being an evangelist of security, so that's how it's going to say, and the reluctance might still exist. So, Richard, let me ask you, what do you think you have to do in order to get past those thick ears, if you will, to get your message?
God, this may sound a little cliche, but in my world, fear is not an option. We've been challenged with putting these new mobile devices on our network. As soon as they hit the street, our business partners want them. They want to use them. They want to execute them. They want to use them to assist in bringing our product to market. And I understand that that is, a business need and a desire that they have. So I've just got to find a way to assess the risk, bring those risks and potential impacts to the organization, and let the business decide if it's really worth it. And if they come to that decision, we find a secure way to implement it as best we can, and we have to continue to assess and monitor and update and enhance our controls to protect those devices. So, again, fear is just really not an option. Mobility, execution, speed, those are more of a requirement within our organization.
Now, Patrick, in your world, do you think you have to really fight tooth and nail to get yourself recognized as someone who is the protector? And if you're saying something, that should be taken seriously. Is it an uphill battle?
It's always an uphill battle because it's an impossible problem to quote-unquote solve. It's really around taking a balanced, risk-oriented approach. And I think what you find operating in a large environment is that the burden of proof for the next incremental security dollar increases. So we see the conversation shifting from, we have to fix the fundamentals, and there are some basic things we have to do, and here are the incidents we'd like to avoid, and having qualitative discussions into having quantitative discussions at some point in time. And that's sometimes difficult to do because the risks that we're addressing, back to the question of is it a known or unknown, there are elements that are known, and then there are elements that are unknown. And we have to be forward-looking in this game. We can't be reactive. When there are statistics, it's already reactive, and we can question the value of those statistics. So we have to be somewhat speculative in terms of trying to understand how is this threat evolving and how do we defend against it. There's always going to be a significant qualitative element to the value proposition we put out there. And it is important to think that way. I know it's dangerous calling on 9/11, but I think we believe in the 9/11 Commission report. One of the quotes that I'm going to paraphrase was around, it was a failure in creativity, which was that I think at the end of the day, that individuals in charge of protecting this country were not looking at connecting the dots and thinking creatively. You could argue they were probably acting rationally based on prior data and incidents, but they were not prepared to think about what's coming up across the horizon and thinking in that kind of adversarial manner right there. The other dynamics that are very interesting that we have to be aware of, again, that we don't want to be reactive about, especially with developments such as cloud computing and kind of the consumerization of mobility especially, is that there is going to be a kind of there a fear of losing control from a technology perspective. If anybody can provision themselves a server with a credit card and 10 minutes of time, and or bring in portable devices that have an amazing amount of processing capacity and storage, how does that alter the landscape for corporate IT that has traditionally been really in control of its own technology? And I think this goes back to one of the prior questions and observations, that the velocity around this is causing us to ask the questions, but the answers are not always obvious about what the right thing to do is.
So let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages. And we'll start with Richard. And the reason we want to go into this further down with respect to what kind of fear and how much incremental fear that is there, plus the threat is there, is because these three different paradigm shifts that we have seen, which is cloud mobility and social networking, have we been able to quantify them and show it to the world out there that, guys, we are not just blowing smoke. There is some actual threat, and it has been quantified, and you see the amount of loss people have incurred because they did not heed the advice earlier. So let's explore this when we come back. Please stay tuned.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
The Sports Mavericks Show redefines the elite athlete by bridging the gap between parents, athletes, and the community. Host Ida Moyet, a.k.a. the Oprah of sports, brings to the Voice America Network original programming, balancing the pursuit of academic excellence and sports participation. The Sports Mavericks Show airs every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. Listeners will be engaged in straightforward talk, spontaneous and unscripted, by the experts. Ida and her guests will explore the challenges of success and failure in sports and will help athletes and their parents navigate the transition from high school, college, and then on to the pros. We put fun back into sports and recognize role models in sports through our Sports Mavericks All-Star Award program. Tune in Tuesday evenings at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time with Ida Moyet and the Sports Mavericks Show right here on the Voice America Sports Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So, Richard, the proof is in the pudding, and when people look at some numbers, they start believing you more. So have you been able to quantify the number of incidents that either have happened at your end or at other companies for you to create a better case in front of your executive management and even the user community to them start heeding your advice and start taking these new paradigm-related security threats seriously?
Yeah, I think the direct way to answer that question is that you're obviously going to have to build up some history within your organization to help support your cause and your claim. You can always relate back to history, and you can pull information from hacks and events that have happened at other locations, but until they actually happen in your organization, they don't seem to have as much impact. But when they do have an impact in your organization, it's huge. As far as the quantifiability and the amount of damage caused associated with that, it's really kind of hard to answer that question without looking at some facts. And the facts are always in the data. I always answer that question with let the data tell the story. In the event that you have a hack or an incident, you get to the root cause and the root location of where that event occurred, look at the data. If it's sensitive in nature, it's something that you don't want external to your environment, those are typically always going to have big impact. So as you're assessing your use of cloud, mobility, social engineering, you really got to look at the type of data that you're putting out there so that you'll understand the effects of the risk if it should occur.
So Patrick, in your world and the way you're surrounded by users and the management, are you not expected to have your act together by having some numbers together before you come and say, we have these three things that we've introduced, you're suddenly going to have a lot more threats, so show me the money?
Absolutely. So, you know, we have to be able to tell the story on numbers. Unfortunately, I think within the security profession, if we understand where those numbers come from, they're not always the highest quality. So many of the numbers that we see around incidents, breaches, et cetera, are based on self-reporting and are aggregated at some point in time. They may be extrapolated, but given that they don't represent that everybody is in the same position for doing mandatory reporting, they can be misleading. For example, there are some great statistics out there about the growth of attacks against the healthcare industry. And if you really dig into it, the reason for that is that those statistics are based on now mandatory reporting requirements at the state and federal level of data losses. And if you further dig into those, most of those self-reported losses basically are related to very tangible devices, such as USB devices, laptops getting stolen, et cetera. So in the aggregate, it can seem extraordinarily scary when you look at a statistic and a number. And I hate to say it, but we'll use that at times to further the discussion with management. But when we really dig into it, we'll find that the science behind the loss statistics that are out there and that are published are really based on a somewhat soft foundation at this point in time.
So, William, do you think what Richard and Patrick said is going to cut it for long term, where we do not have enough proof of what the threat that we are going to be facing going forward or even may have started facing already?
I agree with what both Richard and Patrick stated, but I go back to my earlier point that for those that are in management, you need to make it real and tangible. So one of the things that we've done is we actually map our attacks on Google Earth to show a relationship and a visualization of those. While they may not mean anything from a technical perspective, they mean a lot from a management perspective when you can start to see the number of attacks. And I'm not talking about successful attacks, thank God, but just the number of attacks that we see on a daily basis. Right now, we're looking at approximately 6.5 billion logs a month of noise out there that are potential consequences from an attack, whether it's a botnet or some other malicious activity. The other thing that I would suggest to make it real is, first you have to build a safe haven, because this could backfire. But if you have a safe haven within your community, test your environment. We did a phishing exercise that we tested 10,000 employees on, and we wanted to prove a number of points. One point was, how well do we communicate, and whether or not that communication changes behavior. In the first go-round of that 10,000 employees, there was a 15% failure rate in those that interacted with the website and input personal data into that field, or at least attempted to. We didn't capture any personal data. The exercise ended. We made it a very warm and fuzzy exercise, so nobody got in trouble. There was no penalty, but we wanted it to be educational, and we explained right after that to all those that actually started to insert personal data, what the consequence could be to their environment. And we also learned from them why they did it. And I think some of it is how we communicate. Some of them didn't realize. They understood that Social Security numbers was personal because it was theirs. They may not realize that certain corporate data is sensitive data, and therefore they had no problems putting in some of that information. So it became an educational. That we did that exercise more than once, and I'm glad that each time we've done it, and we've done it differently, that there's been a dramatic improvement in that.
So do you have to do more of this with these new paradigms?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, when we teach our kids, we teach, you know, we sort of lose this as adults. We do that through constantly reminding them and doing it over and over and over again. And that's the way we learn, through repetition. And in adults, we think we say once and you've got it. And in this particular case, that can't happen. We need to do it over and over, and again, in a very safe environment that people aren't scared of being blamed or that they're going to lose their jobs on this. Because a lot of what occurs is human error, not a malicious legal intent to do harm.
Now, at the let's take the one at a time. So suppose I have the social networking happening. Do you think you will have more spams and more scams and that too at real time because we have introduced social networking? Richard, let's start with you.
With any new technology or capability that you introduce into your organization, you're obviously going to inherit increased risk. So I would say with social engineering, you will inherit additional risks. Are they the same? In some cases, they're very similar. Maybe you are prepared to react to them. In some cases, they're going to be different. It is a new technology. So the direct answer to your question is absolutely.
But how do you plan to deal with it?
We're going to have to assess the technology, make a, you know, a determination of the level of risk by doing risk assessment of the capability. Based on the type of data, the user involvement associated with it, and just make a determination as best we can. Anytime you have new technology, it's, to answer that question directly is just difficult because we just don't necessarily have a history with it. We're just going to have to take our knowledge of new technologies that we've had in the past and make a, you know, make an assessment, make a judgment, try to put in controls to prevent and protect.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back. And Patrick, I would like to ask you this question about the social engineering and the spam and scams happening both in social media as well as in real time and the plan that might be available. Do you think we can afford to still be in the planning stage when this thing actually exists and it has been kind of adopted in the enterprise and in the extended enterprises? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Markets up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Wielding power, shaping environments and outcomes, and making things happen are all essential characteristics of great leaders. Yet these qualities alone are not enough to ensure your success. In a complex world, how do you decide what's most important to you? In your career, your relationships, your finances, your family, in the world around you, in the whole of your life at large? Dr. Joseph Riggio, the host of Leadership Intuition, says that personal leadership, the desire to take charge of your life, is the key to creating futures that work and building a life worth living. Join Joseph as he reveals the power of uncovering and living your own personal mythology, the key to personal transformation, exquisite performance, and social influence. Learn to look inside and discover your personal mythology and unique leadership style. Go beyond conventional advice and discover your unique success blueprint on Leadership Intuitions with Dr. Joseph Riggio each Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America channel. Leadership Intuitions, power, achievement, relationships.
Zoom Leadership. It's the big picture issues of the day, up close and personal capabilities of leadership, and a desirable future of constant renewal. Zoom Leadership. It's the economic crisis made clear, patterns and perspectives of leadership, and the importance of changing the way we pursue our future. Join host John Schmidt every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time. Zoom Leadership. An inside look at what's really going on in business, government, and civil society. Tune in every week on the Voice America Business Channel.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
So, Patrick, as we thought, we will challenge you with this question about the spam and scams, and in real time, and in social, environment, these exist today. Can we say conveniently that we are still in planning stage, or we have to have something available, ready, and actionable, and we are doing it?
It's a bit of both. If we look at social networking specifically, it's very interesting. It's almost a generational shift. Even it crosses generational boundaries about people being extraordinarily open about sharing their personal lives, their connections, and you apply some abstract thinking to that and connect the dots, and there is value in understanding social networks, how people connect to each other. Post 9/11, I had a chance of meeting with an individual who started a company that was eventually sold to IBM, which mined social networking connections to identify connections between individuals that may not otherwise be noticed. And that was used very actively to identify relationships between potential terrorist suspects and piece it together what happened. So since then, now look at what's happened with Facebook, LinkedIn, et cetera. And if anything, the growth in the amount of data that people are willingly sharing about their lives and about their friends and who they're connected with both socially from a business perspective has grown exponentially, I would say, almost on an annual basis. So the opportunity for scraping, for miscreants basically get access to this is very high. And there's evidence that they are doing exactly that. From the most tinfoil hat type of an espionage scenario, if we look back at the Aurora attacks earlier in the year and look at the initial entry points, I think the original entry point was that the agents involved, who knows what the nationality was, researched the individuals they want to target. They dug into the social networks. They compromised accounts of trusted individuals in those social networks and used that to influence individuals, their targets, to go to booby trap links that hack their systems and put the malware on. So, you know, there is some evidence from the malicious threat using that. There's also significant evidence that what are they called, London scams, for example, where you'll receive a message to your social network from what appears to be a friend saying, hey, I'm stuck in Nigeria, can you wire me some money? You know, definitely leveraging that type of research in a very convincing way, where they can put in place a profile that convinces you that you're actually talking to your friend and he actually needs money. So, you know, beyond that, these are some of these things that I would say the scammers are very creative in terms of thinking about how can they leverage this information. But from a defensive position, we've had not that same opportunity. And also from a defensive position, we don't control these social networks. So you have to ask yourself, what is the role of information security from a corporate perspective? How much do we attempt to educate and intrude on the lives of our individuals? And how do we design processes now that are not dependent on, say, maintaining secrecy of personal facts? A lot of interesting challenges that happen there. One of the things we've done to kind of address that proactively is that immediately we put in place a social media policy that gives guidance and limits what individuals do in terms of representing the company, basically making it very clear that you do this personally, you do not engage in anything that represents you as the company. And frankly, also kind of try to address what I consider a supply and demand imbalance, which is that if IT doesn't step up and provide an equivalent or better service internally, then individuals will trend to the external services. So what we have done is actually put in place our own, I wouldn't say social networking site, but basically collaboration environment internally for individuals to be able to share information and engage and network and communicate and make it very clear that that is the tool you use for business. You do not go out to Facebook to do the equivalent.
Will, how are you grappling with this and what's your answer for the rest of the world that can you safely go and say, I'm not ready yet? For the social
internet. Not ready yet to join the social media venture?
Yeah, I mean, or I'm still planning.
That's the case, some... I think, as we've all could agree, that that's probably way too late. I think, you know, we're in it whether we want to be or not. And I don't think that it's an issue of all or nothing. It really is one of both understanding the technology, as we have spoken, understanding that scams and, you know, have been around from the beginning of time, regardless of how those scams were initiated. And, you know, if you even look now, we've got a, you know, what I call the human factor. You have to understand human nature. And the reason why we consistently get these scams and spams is that there's going to be a percentage of the population, regardless of how well we train them, regardless of what the knowledge of the consequence of what's going to occur, will fall prey to them. You know, and I am sad to use my mother, who's 85 years old, and thank God she's not on the computer, because every once in a while I'll still get a call saying, I won $1 million. And I said, you did? And she said, yeah, I got this letter, and it said, I won $1 million, and I need to call this number. And I said, you didn't call it, did you? And she goes, no. So I think that there are those that just going to fall prey to some of this. So what do we do? And I'm not a pessimist. I'm actually very much of an optimist. But 100% security is never going to exist. But it is all about layers. It's about layers of good practice, both from a technology side of the house as well as a human side of the house. And it's about management in addition to that technology. But, you know, as companies get better at identifying the spam and the scams that are out there, consumers and users are better protected. You know, there are antivirus companies now that offer alerts relative to certain sites that you go to as to whether or not that site could be, what's the reputation of that site, if it's fraudulent or not. So I think there's a lot of that can be put into place to help us all be safer while we're on the internet. But again, I think that we have to recognize that human factor, and it's not to give up on it, and it's not to say that we're lost because of that. But I think that the policies that you put in place need to be recognizing the business need for those technologies. We shouldn't just implement technologies for technology's sake. There has to be a program need to push that technology forward. And if, for example, if your organization does not allow individuals to access their personal email accounts,
at work, why would you allow them through one of the social networking sites to do so? And by doing so, potentially get behind your security precautions that are in place from a corporate perspective. So I think that as you implement these technologies, do it thoughtfully. Do it based on the knowledge that you have. It's got to be fluid. I say security success is saying to somebody that I am more secure today than I was yesterday. You can't look much beyond that because it's going to change. The threats are constant. So it's a constant evaluation. We're under persistent attack. And it really is one that we need constant monitoring of our environment. And now that that environment is mobile, the way we protect the data has changed to an individualized protection because it's everywhere.
Now, we just had somebody in our community write in a comment and actually ask the question related to mobility, and that's a good segue for us, is that we are talking about mobility and there's BYOM concept that has been introduced. And that would be awesome for the IT because they will have fewer headaches and they will be able to centralize through whatever way in terms of technology to get to do their jobs without having to handle that infrastructure. So this is from Charles Robb, who is a policy analyst with NASCIO. And he has asked this question, is Kaiser Permanente and Textron, I mean, these two, Patrick and Richard, your organizations, have you introduced BYOM and what has been your issue and or challenge related to it? So Richard, why don't we start with you, Patrick?
Okay, sure. We've had extensive discussions around personally owned devices and bring your own machines into work. And they're still ongoing. My position at this point in time is that as the healthcare industry, we're being held to a standard of perfection in terms of protecting the information that we hold, and we're dealing with health information. Do we really want to be on the cutting edge of adopting some of these new paradigms, or do we want to let some other organizations go first? If I look at the level of maturity that is there, in terms of being able to layer on the security controls on personally owned devices, I would say that that maturity is not very high right now. If anything, as the market is getting fragmented around the underlying systems themselves, be it Android, the iOS systems, and other ones basically, the security vendors are in a game of catch-up. There are lots of other legal questions also that come up, such as, if I have a hostile termination where I have to have somebody leave the organization because they are maybe suspected of committing fraud, what happens if I try to seize their equipment to take a forensic image and they say, no, this is not your property, I won't let you do it? Interesting impasse, I don't know. So I guess where I'm at right now is that there are a lot of unanswered questions around how you would manage security in an environment where the end-user computing assets are not owned by the company. And, quite frankly, I have a pretty good imagination of what the issues can be, but I'd like to see more maturity in terms of an understanding of best practices for implementing that and more maturity in terms of the security vendors coming up with products that allow me to get a sense of assurance that's at least coming close to what I have when I own and control those devices.
So, Richard, do you think you have secured the fort enough to be able to allow BYOM yet? But let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. And, Richard, let's ask this question again about the BYOM and what are you doing with respect to it? Are you saying flat no, or you're securing the fort, or you're in the process? Please stay tuned.
Markets up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.evol.com today. Evol helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Evol delivers. To find out how Evol can help your company, visit www.evol.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Evol, delivering global IT talent. That's www.evol, A-V-V-A-L, evol.com. Visit today.
Being here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss being here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Interstate Sportsman Talk Radio Show brings two well-known outdoorsmen to the Voice America Network with hunting and fishing info news, talking about everything from new sporting gear, places to hunt and fish, and getting more from your recreation time. Join hosts Brock Ray and Don Kirk Friday mornings at 6 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 Eastern, for the Interstate Sportsman on the Voice America channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So, Richard, how much have you to you are supposed to secure the Ford before you would allow BYOM? And if you've done so, what gaps might still remain before you'd say, okay, let's take a leap of faith and allow it anyways?
Yeah, we're not there yet. In the past, we have adopted that method that we're not going to allow personal devices to be connected to our network in any form or fashion, whether or not it's connecting it to your laptop that's connected to the network or, you know, in the case of like a mobile device externally. However, we're getting a lot of requests. I'm getting a lot of push from the business to enable that. So we are taking a very hard look at it. Currently, we've done a lot of partnering and a lot of peer reviews with organizations similar to ours that have enabled it. And a consistent theme that I'm seeing with that is that there is a back to the we've already heard this concern with legal. They're having to sign off on a policy stating that if we do connect that device to our network, that we have rights to go in and perform forensic imaging, wiping, security reviews, push policy down to them that are consistent with those within our organization. And, you know, at that point, they have the opportunity to opt out of it. So we're working through those hurdles. At the same time, we're working through the hurdles associated with actually being able to secure the devices. One of the bigger questions, and I heard a comment about this earlier, was cost. Where do those costs get incurred as far as enabling that technology? As soon as we bring that technology and that capability for users to connect their own devices to the network, we've enabled an infrastructure that we haven't previously had in the past that's probably significant, going to have significant costs, going to have significant oversight and control requirements associated with it. Going to have to come from somewhere. So we're going to have to tie that back to the business somewhere and get buy-in. It's not just a matter of can we enable it. You also need to take a hard look at it. Should you enable it?
So coming to cloud computing, and in fact, you know what? Before we get into the cloud computing, Patrick, a question that we were discussing during the break or something about strategy that you mentioned, what you could utilize for BYOM before you even allow IT to tamper with it.
That's right. So, I mean, right now I feel like, I think you mentioned earlier that I'm taking a bit of a conservative approach. But at the same time, I think, you know, the analogy is I feel like little Dutch boy sticking a finger in the dike. The pressure is building. So we are planning, and we see there are some opportunities for compensating technologies that we need to think about and we're investigating right now. One of those being, I think Cisco branded it as network admission control. so that we can positively identify at the network level devices that are ours and that are not ours, and knock off the ones that are not ours or put them into a guest network to kind of limit the damage. We've also invested in some R&D around virtual desktop type capabilities, really so that you can have a compartment or a container on a personally owned device that is secure, that is for conducting business in, basically, and managing that, and a variety of other technologies. So, you know, the product and the vendor space, they have some offerings, but I firmly believe that has to be factored into the cost of the decision the organization makes to allow this activity. It shouldn't be viewed as a security add-on. It needs to be factored into the TCO when you're looking at the business case associated with allowing personally owned devices into the corporation.
Now, let's quickly look at cloud computing. And, Will, this is a question for you. Don't you think that we, by introducing cloud computing, are also creating a single point of failure, or, for that matter, a juicier target for someone with a malintent, that if they can break through that without having to come close to your organization, you can bring them down?
I think there are a number of issues. And one, whether it's a juicier target or not, it definitely is a resource-enhanced target, meaning that depending on who else is in that cloud with you, the type of data that could be harvested by those that want to do us harm. So, you know, it's all about market share as well. As you've seen, you can probably plot some of the targets based on the market share of the companies that are out there. The same thing, I think, that would occur relative into the cloud. So I think the other and more important issues deal with what we were just talking about on what is that third-party security that where now your data is located. Who else is in that cloud with you? And whether or not, what rights do you have to that data? And is that data located even in this country? Or is it in a country that may not have the same rights that we have legally if something starts to go wrong? You know, I'm a big believer sometimes about lawyers, keeping the lawyers away from the table. I'm a lawyer by education, so I can say that. However, I think in this particular case, it's probably one of the most essential things that you can do is to ensure that you have your legal counsel involved at the contractual stages of this to make sure all your rights are protected and that you have the ability to do vulnerability scanning, to do forensics if things occur, and that data is really your data. And that if you need diversity and if you need segregation, that is, in fact, what you're getting. Sadly, we've learned from the past that where we thought we had diversity, we didn't. You know, one of the speakers spoke about the 9/11 aftermath and that horrific, tragic event. What we found in New York State was where we thought we had diversity from a network's perspective, we didn't have, even though we thought we had procured that. So I think that understanding what the really risks are associated with this and ensuring that from a legal perspective that whoever you're going to walk down this road with, that you have those rights protected in case something goes wrong. And as we all know, it's 100% security is not attainable. Something's going to happen, so you have to prepare for that occurrence and then mitigate from there. So, and I also concur that I'm a big believer. I don't want to be the first one out of the box. I like the second generation things before I jump in. But quite frankly, I think that we are in cloud computing right now, whether we want to be or not. So I think getting our arms around it and building those protections on the security perspective is essential.
Okay, I've got 1 minute, 30 seconds each. Richard, fire away on cloud computing. What do you think we should do?
Well, the suggestions I would add to that conversation, I agree with what I just heard. I would also add that contractually you build in the right to continuously audit where needed, and also that you assess the controls associated with the environment commensurate with the level of risk of the data that you're putting in that environment.
Patrick.
going to take a contrarian opinion just to have a little fun here, but I would say you actually gain some obscurity by having the data in a ginormous cloud. How difficult is it going to be for somebody to target or even to know that you're in that cloud? There's also potentially more defensibility, which is that service provider has a limited set of services rather than a very broad, deep infrastructure they can potentially defend with much more discipline than you could as a small component in your very large infrastructure. And frankly, it's probably going to be built based on newer technology components that are going to be more agile in terms of security and availability. So just to say, there are some upsides to the cloud potentially.
On behalf of the show and listeners, thank you so much, Richard, Patrick, and Will, for sharing your thoughts on these three different disruptive technologies. While we have introduced and we see a great ROI or a perceived ROI, but it also comes with a package, which is a threat package. How do we effectively deal with it? And hopefully we'll be able to get a net ROI, which is still positive. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again. If you have any questions about the show and or the specific topic, please send us to questions@ciotalkradio.com. That is questions@ciotalkradio.com. Please join our community. Enjoy the interaction. Get to know your peers from different organizations worldwide. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.